specifically in your... Sir, I'm here to speak to these folks. You can hold your own well. If you want to give me your book, I'll be happy to read it, but don't interrupt my conversation with these folks. All right? All right? Show me some courtesy.
All right, this is an hour about the four P's, pipeline, protests, politicians, and punishment. Hey, everybody, Kate Delaney, America Tonight. As I said, the next 60 minutes, that's what it's all about. We start with the pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline. You know where I stand on this? If you don't, you just tuned in for the first time. I say, why are we not doing it? 1,700 miles of jobs. That's how I look at it. Why even risk the Chinese taking the thing over and backing the pipeline out the other end, if you will, of Canada instead of down through the belly of the United States and into the Gulf Coast? Well, the president was in Oklahoma and was sure to announce that, listen, we are definitely opening up for business the southern part of this pipeline. And naturally looking toward the rest of the deal. So Obama told the folks who were gathered to hear him that forget about listening to the people who are shaking their heads and are saying no, 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 and the people who want my job. Take a listen.
They make jokes about biofuels. I guess they like gas guzzlers because they're against raising fuel standards. Imagine if these guys had been around when Columbus set sail. They'd be charter members of the Flat Earth Society. Lately, we've heard a lot of politicians, a lot of folks who are running for a certain office. They shall go unnamed. They dismiss wind power. They dismiss solar power.
Yeah, and you know what? Here's the problem. I don't know that so many of the people, a lot of you have called this show, we've had massive discussions about this. The problem is the viability, and when the viability is very, very far off into the future. I said, what's your number? What do you think the number is where we could actually look toward a different alternative that we can consider to be affordable by the middle class? And I said at least 20-30. Many of you thought that I was being a little bit optimistic and thought it'd be even further down the road. Now, the president or somebody who is really pushing clean and green alternatives would say that that's being cynical. And the reason that we're not there is because we're not pushing in that direction. But that's not true. Go back to Jimmy Carter. He was talking about this. He was talking about this in the 70s. And here we are. What is it? 2012? It's all talk, 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 then some money that goes out in loans. And ultimately, we still have moved forward with the exploration of the technologies, but not in mass producing it. Not in mass producing it, not in changing the combustible engine. And that's where we have to go to make this truly what Americans can embrace. I mean, you know, that's the name of the game. How can we embrace it when we're so far away from it and all of these loans are still going out to companies who are developing things, and they're frankly behind the eight ball. So maybe we need better companies that are pursuing the alternatives, who are aggressive and have a clever way to mass produce this. But I want to meet that person. Let's just say that. All right, protests, huge protests in Sanford. And the Sanford police chief, Bill Lee, steps down following the Trayvon Martin shooting. This thing has just grown huge, like a cancer that you can't put out. And the main problem is the fact that George Zimmerman, the guy who went after Trayvon and, you know, ultimately shot and killed him, was never charged. This happened at the end of February. And since then, the family has been calling for justice and why wasn't he arrested and all that sort of stuff. And now it is finally caught up with the rest of the world because it's a national firestorm, without a doubt. So the 17-year-old black kid who laid in the street with the Skittles around his head and the soda was killed by a Hispanic Crime Watch volunteer. And Bill Lee, the chief is being questioned as to why wasn't he charged with anything? Why would, you know, we understand the stand your ground law, but that allows for someone meeting force with force. So are we missing something here? He wasn't arrested. The police, in the police report, he wasn't arrested or charged for the shooting because he claimed it was self-defense and fell under the stand your ground law. Now that's being torn apart and people are trying to figure out really what does that mean. This story is far from over. In fact, it's just beginning. It's a little ripple now. It's going to be a tsunami in the end. And there are protests. There was a huge protest in New York the other day, but there's protests all over the place, even, in fact, in Miami and some other spots in Florida. Some kids walked out of the classroom to protest what happened to this 17-year-old. Remember, he was in Miami. Trayvon was from Miami, was visiting his father in this gated community outside of Orlando. And the rest, sadly, is history and what all the commotion is about. Quick reminder, coming up next week, we'll be broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The individual health mandate is being challenged, the constitutionality of it, and we're going to be there for the Supreme Court oral arguments, looking at all ends of this, looking at all sides of you know, now what has happened after 2 years of affordable health care, and this mandate hasn't kicked in yet. The idea with 26 different states challenging it and another national business group that lawyer has an army of lawyers, and they're also in it. They're part of the oral arguments. In fact, we're going to talk to them next on the show. The idea is, what is the ultimate vote going to be on the constitutionality? Where are the Supreme Court justices going to fall with this? And we've had all kinds of promises with health care, but people are seeing these increases in their premiums and don't understand, well, we're seeing an increase in the premiums, but we're not seeing better health care. So there's certainly misconceptions out there. And what happens with these premiums that went up 9% in 2010, another 9% in 2011. And if the law continues to stand as it is, one of the things that will happen is that all private medical insurance companies are going to have to send patient information to Washington's central database without the patient's permission. You know how that's a very picky thing right now when you sign and get certain reports and documents. Now it's all, it would all be free and out there going to this database. And then what's going to happen with jobs, ones that aren't created because of the higher premiums to pay for all the services that the government is requiring? These are just a few of the things. The taxes on individuals and businesses and pharmaceutical companies and whatnot. And we've only scratched the surface. And we're looking at all sides of this, the pros and the cons, absolutely. Great conversation coming up on this very subject, a preview of what's to come next week, next on America Tonight.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw for the enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states, it's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Are you or someone you know suffering from high blood pressure, cholesterol, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural way to overcome these health challenges? Extendivite is made from herbs known to help with these symptoms. Made from garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, and four other herbs, Extendivite goes to work detoxifying heavy metals and killing fungus and virus to enhance your overall health. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com. Extend your life with
Extendivite. Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
In a coming-apart world, you need something to keep it tied together. That something is Atwood Rope, the highest quality rope made in the USA from exotic braids for military, rescue, arborists, shipyards, towline, or boating. Quality rope at affordable prices you and your customers can depend on. Find a dealer or shop online at atwoodrope.net. Enter promo code RADIO to receive 100 feet of 550 paracord free with purchase. Atwood Rope, working to keep the world tied together.
Front and center, everybody's buzzing about it in Washington, D.C. Now with the second anniversary of the Affordable Health Care Act, here we go, the Supreme Court, 3 days of oral arguments in a lawsuit challenging Obamacare, and a case that's historically significant, but more than historically significant, it affects every single one of us. We need no introduction with this because we've been talking about it for a very long time here on ATN. Jean Carr joins us. She's in the wings right now with the National Federation of Independent Business. Jean, thanks for popping on ATN.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So this is big, and we look at it from the business point of view, and just even saying that National Federation of Independent Business, you think of how many businesses there are in this country, small business, the backbone of commerce in the United States, and entrepreneurial endeavors couldn't be bigger, and they're getting crushed by the weight of trying to afford health care. In fact, if anything, I've heard from plenty of people who have called this show and people we've had on as guests that it's not affordable, that it's gone in the opposite direction. So far, as I said, this is the 2-year anniversary. What have you seen?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, health care has been the number one issue of the NFIB membership. We have about 350,000 small business owners as members for decades of rising health insurance costs. So then, you know, Congress comes in 2 years ago and they say, oh, we're going to help small business and we're going to lower costs. Well, guess what? The opposite happened. Our members are telling us their premiums are already going up. Some of them have lost their plans already, and the future is quite grim unless we are successful in the coming months.
Yeah. So the key things, and for almost 2 years you've been fighting this, you've fought the law in court that long. What are the key things you think that that people don't understand? I mean, maybe we get the threat of it that you would be forced to buy in, and isn't this a fix for the economy? What do you think it is that that is cloak and dagger that people don't really get, Jean?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, if you think about it, What Congress could have done is say, well, we're gonna tax people. We're gonna put a new tax out there that pays for whatever we're doing with healthcare. But they knew that would be politically unpalatable, that they couldn't get it through. So instead, they disguised it as this individual mandate. So if you don't buy health insurance, you pay a fine. You're penalized. You are a criminal, mm-hmm. in the eyes of the U.S. government. So it was very sneaky, quite frankly, but From my perspective, my members' perspective, I'm so glad that they screwed up because you know what? It's unconstitutional. You can't force individuals to buy something. It's not American. It's not constitutional.
Yeah. Riding on that, just on that alone, do you have a good feeling about this case? Because everybody's trying to handicap it. Everybody's looking in a crystal ball. And you hear all kinds of things from constitutional lawyers and others. What's your gut feeling tell you?
You know, we are feeling really good. And I have the privilege, because I'm close to it, to have heard our attorneys, who are amazing. And our lead attorney, Michael Carbon, has argued before the court something like a dozen times. He's won every case he's ever argued before the Supreme Court. And I've had the privilege of listening to him walk through our arguments. And I listen to him. I'm not a lawyer, but I have common sense. And I listen to him and I think, oh my gosh, we are going to win this thing. It just, when you hear him, it's smart and it's legally solid, but it also makes so much common sense. So I feel very good about our chances.
And you know what the argument's going to be? The argument is going to be, because you talk about the constitutionality, that there's a thing called the Commerce Clause that gives Congress the power, authority, whatever you want to call it, to actually push or regulate the sale of goods such as health insurance. So what's the comeback, do you think, for that?
The fact that you're trying to regulate people in the case of this law who are not in the marketplace yet. Okay, the Commerce Clause, if you're in the marketplace, if you are already purchasing something or doing something, but to force someone to buy it, that's not what it was designed for. You can't push people into the marketplace. The Commerce Clause is there for people that have already chosen to be in the marketplace of whatever product or service.
Yeah. And here's what's interesting, too. You know, we keep focusing, and rightfully so, because this is the challenge, about the individual health mandate, that part of the law. But we haven't even talked about the entire law. So if the mandate is removed, what do you think happens? Would it allow the other provisions to stay, or it doesn't seem like it would hold up? Wouldn't it all collapse?
Yeah, I mean, the individual mandate, because of the way it makes the math work, you know, you bring all these young, healthy people and you force them to make a bad economic decision for themselves to buy health insurance, and that pumps all this money into the insurance system to pay for the health care of others, essentially. So if you take that away, if you take the mandate away, the numbers don't work anymore. There's no choice but to rates to totally skyrocket. But the really important thing here is that Congress didn't even put in what they call the severability clause, okay? So we are arguing in front of the court that it's not severable. The whole thing is completely glued together, and if you pull out one piece, and the individual mandate being the foundation, if you will, you pull out the foundation, it has to fall.
Yeah. You mentioned how big that your membership is, and I, in introducing you, I mentioned the fact that we know that the backbone of this country is made up of businesses. And of what did you start to hear of all of your from your members when the health care bill became a law and became a reality? What did you start to hear? Did you get just a ton of email?
Yeah, a lot of it I probably can't say on the radio. I mean, small business owners they're pretty passionate about freedom. And frankly, the government is knocking on their door and sending them mail and calling them all the time anyway, and they already feel the burden of government at both the state and federal level. And this, boy, did this push them over the edge. And again, talk about a sore spot. They're already struggling to afford insurance for themselves, for their families, and their employees. And it just pushed them over the edge. I mean, they're mad as heck.
Yeah. The National Federation of Independent Business with 26 state co-plaintiffs, am I right in this, are part of this? Because as you were saying, you felt privileged to be able to hear some of what was going on with the lawyers. You're definitely involved. I mean, you're right in the middle of this. You're in the heart of this, arguing about the mandate. So actually appearing before the Supreme Court, am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, actually, and if it weren't for our NFIB's specific argument about the individual mandate, this case would not be in the federal court. I mean, in the Supreme Court. Our argument is considered the strongest. We have the best standing. I mean, if you look at all the lawsuits that were filed over the past 2 years, let's say it's like a bracket system because it's basketball season, and, you know, some people won their suits and some lost, and it went through all the lower appellate courts. Well, NFIB's suit was the one that just kept moving up those brackets, and here we are.
And do you think a lot of that, I mean, obviously you have good attorneys, but do you think a lot of that was really flushing out that constitutionality and that whole thing on the mandate that never before have we forced people to buy something they didn't want for the benefit of other people?
Yeah, it's interesting. This has been the question that, that the opposition, in our case the federal government, the opposition has not been able at any level of any court so far to answer that question of, okay, if you force people to buy health insurance, what can't you force them to buy? Can't you force them to buy a Chevy Volt? Can't you force them, you know, to start a 401k? And the government has no answer to that question.
Yeah. So that has to, we go back to the same thing as we're handicapping it. We can't help but do that. Because you mentioned basketball and we all want to be on the winning side.
That's right.
So it does have to give you confidence that the NFIB is on the right path.
I do. I think we're on the right side of history. We're on the right side of freedom. It's, you know, again, when I listen to our attorneys lay it out, I think, well, of course you can't. I mean, of course the government can't force me to buy something. That's absurd. You know, even as a legal scholar, as a layperson, you know the government's never forced you to buy something. It speaks to your heart and it speaks to your desire for freedom, and that's pretty strong in our membership.
Yeah. In one sense, and I said that about the historic element of it, the 3 days of the oral arguments, I mean, there has to be kind of a sense of excitement now that you're finally after these years, boom, this is it. This is D-Day. This is it right here.
Oh, man, we are so excited. I mean, when we found out that our case had been accepted and we found out that they dedicated 6 hours of oral arguments, and that's more than the court has allocated since Brown versus the Board of Education. I mean, we've always believed it was very important and very special, but when the court decided to take it and they allocated that time, wow. I mean, we are beside ourselves. And I have to tell you, you know, I live and work in Washington, D.C., and I walk by the National Archives every night on my way to the metro to commute home, and I look at the archives and I think the Constitution is in there, and baby, we are fighting for you.
Yeah, I like that analogy. What a picture you have painted for us, without a doubt. All right, Jean Card, I love your enthusiasm for the National Federation of Independent Business. These are the big boys fighting for this against the individual health mandate and the constitutionality of it. Jean, thanks for joining us.
Will I have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boosts resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali-C.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours, too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved, guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for 3 decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze-dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Did you know that thousands of industrial toxins, including aluminum, heavy metals like mercury and lead, and even nuclear radiation, have contaminated the air, food, and water supply and are lodged inside your body? These contaminants are poisoning your body from the inside out. No, the government doesn't care, nor will they save you. Do nothing, and these accumulated toxins may slowly lead to degenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, heart disease, or cancer. Take charge of your health before it's too late. Liquid Zeolite is the best natural all-round remedy to safely and effectively remove all kinds of toxins from your body. Use Liquid Zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com for fatigue, headaches, heavy metal poisoning, memory loss, and joint pain. Zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee and is available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of Zeolite at RestoreYourHealthNow.com or call 800-880-9976. That's 800-880-9976. 100% safe and amazing. Try a Liquid Zeolite today.
Speaking of family trees, the family tree for Mitt Romney was the money tree, although he did go out on his own and make his own money, his own fortunes, and he's always quick to tell you that story. However, let's face it, his father was successful, he was the governor of Michigan, and you go back to that political breeding grounds of the Bushes, the Kennedys, the Clintons, so on and so forth, and same thing, really, with the Romneys. It was absolutely there in the genes. He was the governor of Massachusetts. We all know that. Now we got 157 days until the convention. So who holds the golden ticket? Well, we know the answer is, delegate-wise, Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney has the horses to do this. And Rick Santorum, in the last couple of weeks, hasn't been able to get the amount of delegates that he would need to really even try to mount any kind of a real serious push to grab the brass ring, ultimately the nomination for the Republicans in this race for president. And the pressure is absolutely on Santorum to bow out. Ron Paul says he's in it all the way to the end, and he's got lots of backing behind him. So he's going to stay in, and he's going to be a factor in the convention or a clearinghouse for some possible things that could happen. Newt Gingrich is saying the same thing, that he's going to stay in it. So there's no signs of anyone throwing in the white flag. But if you don't have the money, you just can't keep on ticking. So that's the bottom line. You can talk all you want, but talk is cheap, as they say. And running for president is not cheap. So Rick Santorum losing very badly to Romney in Illinois and falling 300 delegates behind Romney is huge. Then Jeb Bush weighing in and picking Romney as the guy is another nail in the coffin of Rick Santorum, just from the political perspective, because I don't care about endorsements, and I don't know that the common man cares about endorsements, but the party cares about it. Santorum is just focused on trying to stay in the race. But what does this do for the general election and Romney's chances? And what is it for Santorum? What is his political future? He lost his last bid to become the representative, the senator, again for Pennsylvania. So what is his end game? Does he graciously concede, and does he end up somewhere in the mix? Or does he continue to hammer Romney? Here's a snippet of the latest sling in the Romney direction from Santorum.
This election isn't going to be won by someone, by a Republican candidate who's going to outspend Barack Obama 10-1 to win a race. And that's how Romney wins. He wins because he overwhelmingly outspends whoever's in his way.
All right, so the sling, he's got to put the sling down. It's true, he's right, it is about money, but Santorum knows that as well, because he needs the money to run. That's how you win in politics. If you've got no money, you got no chance in this country. That's how it is. It is about fundraising. When you're a politician, you have to be able to get out there and get people behind you and have them fuel you, give you the money. Where if you don't have that, where are you going? See, it's interesting because Ron Paul gets the money from the common guy, but he doesn't have the backing of the establishment. It's like, I even saw something the other day about how many Twitter mentions he got, even in the past week. It was like almost 60,000. Romney's not even at 60,000. So you've got this guy's got a popular trend and some movement behind him, but he doesn't have the establishment behind him. You have to have the money and the establishment, and the establishment has the money, and the party also will throw money behind the candidate, we already know that, in the general election. So Santorum had better, I guess, start winding it down. I guess he has to decide where he wants to go, because at some point it gets nasty. Remember Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama? Hillary Clinton ends up as the Secretary of State, choice position in the cabinet, because yes, it was ugly and nasty, but at some point that all winded down. So Santorum has to wind down, or he is out on the street. At some point, then it'll be enough is enough. You've got Louisiana's primary vote on Saturday. You have Mitt Romney swearing up and down that he's a conservative over and over and over again, because he's trying to convince people who have seen his politics in the past that are not sold on the whole conservative Romney thing that he is a conservative. But if you look at his policies for Massachusetts, they're not conservative. They're not. Not every single thing, but the majority. So Romney's really working to attract the hard right in the party as fast as he can. What did I say? 157 days before the election. 157 days. All right, I thought it'd be fun to turn the tables a little bit and mix it up and do a little fair or foul. You decide, fair or foul. A New Jersey middle school doesn't think it's appropriate to hug, so they are banning hugging at the school. Fair or foul? Should you be able to hug when you're a preteen motoring around going to classes? And when we say hug, sometimes, you know, it's two girls hugging each other. Woo, get excited. You made cheerleader or whatever. They're saying no hugging. So there's some confusion. This is Matawan, New Jersey, where this ban kicked in. I think we told you that this was looked like it was going to be a policy. So it's now the new policy. They're not allowed to do that. There's a hugging ban. Wouldn't it be strange, though, to come home from... I was thinking, what did I talk about to my mother when I came home from middle school? Come home and hand them the piece of paper. Oh, we're not allowed to hug anymore. So parents got a recorded message from the principal trying to make sure everybody understood. that hugging can be inappropriate, so they want to make sure there's no inappropriate physical contact. This was what was on the answering machine. We certainly do not have a policy against hugging, nor do we intend to suspend students who are hugging, but we just don't think it's appropriate, and we don't think they should hug when they're not under supervision, especially, and this would be a good time to start it. What? When they're not under supervision? I think they're confused, and something got them nervous, and they decided that we're going to ban hugging, but then when people complain, we'll sort of make it a confusing policy. Okay. No hugging at the school. I'm going to say foul because they don't even really know how they're implementing this ban. It seems, needless to say, awkward. This is a follow-up, but it is fair or foul to me. Whitney Houston, there was a lot of controversy in a way over her death because of a couple of different things. There was some flap over the flag being flown half-mast in New Jersey, which I thought was ridiculous for Whitney Houston. Then I went home to New Jersey the week that after she was buried, and it was Whitney Houston all the time, constantly everywhere I went, selling compilation CDs of her hits, the whole thing. The whole nine yards. Whitney Houston is New Jersey to the people in New Jersey, and they thought that the flying of the flag half-mast was completely correct. Wonder how people feel now. I mean, they know that she struggled with drugs, but it's official. Cocaine hurt her heart. It exacerbated her heart condition and played a role in her accidental drowning in the bathtub of a Beverly Hills hotel suite. There were the autopsy results that finally came through. And that's what it showed. There's been all this speculation as to what it was, prescription drugs, whatever, intoxication mixed with the drugs, because they found several things, anti-anxiety drugs, Xanax and marijuana and blah, 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 and Benadryl. But they concluded that was not what it did. Cocaine played a role. How much? And they're not really saying how much cocaine. But cocaine definitely was part of what happened to Whitney Houston. So I say at this point, it's tragic. She had problems. She struggled. She struggled with the limelight and her addictions. And it's too bad. It's foul. Because what a way to go, where it seemed like she had led people to believe that she had licked some of her problems, but apparently she did not lick those problems at all. And ultimately, it caught her in the end. Sadly. Sadly caught her in the end. All right, let's give you one other quick fair or foul. This one's interesting. And I talked about this a little bit on a previous show, but I got a ton of email about it. There was a juror who, to get out of jury duty, made up a fantastical lie and then called a popular radio show in Denver to brag about getting out of jury duty, saying that she went in curlers, reindeer socks, mismatched, heavy makeup smeared on her face. So over the top, she did that. And said she had post-traumatic syndrome, said that she was a victim of domestic violence and all kinds of other things. And so, ultimately, Susan Cole, because she called a radio station, is now facing felony charges. Foul. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment
permanent basis, but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeSig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeSig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeSig.com. And LeSig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeSig.com, spelled LeCIG.com. LeSig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Forget, coming up in our next hour on America Tonight, you could win a wireless GPS and $100 worth of sausage, plus a few other things from our prize closet. Coming up, if you nail the score, we're combining nail the score and a little March Madness for some mischief. All you have to do is correctly guess the score of one of the two games, or maybe you get two games right. Wouldn't that be wild? I don't know what the games will be. I know that my alma mater, woohoo, Ohio University Bobcats, go Cats, go. They are in the Sweet 16 against UNC. What are their chances? I think when you're the Cinderella or underdog team or whatever, which is the beauty of the NCAA tournament, who cares? You just go for it. You play your game and let the chips fall where they may. The expression, let the chips fall where they may, could also apply to a couple of hard criminal stories that are worth talking about. Will justice be served in the case of Trayvon Martin? This really is the huge buzz across the nation. What happened in Florida, and is that law, more importantly, is that law effective, you know, to stand your ground? If somebody is coming after you and they're using deadly force, and it's a shame because, I mean, it's a shame that it happened in the first place, but George Zimmerman, who has a history of a couple of different things, because this is the deal. You know, you're fair game once anything happens. I mean, all of us, I guess, are fair game in the world the way it is now, because instantaneous, baby. thanks to the little devices that we carry and that we love that have cell phone capabilities, email, pictures, you know, the whole thing. You can catch anyone in anything that they might have done in the past. So George Zimmerman wanted to be a cop and moved with his family to Florida about 10 years ago. He was not an official member of the Neighborhood Watch program. He was incredibly zealous about patrolling Sanford, which is where his community was. But, you know, here's the thing. He helped some people along the way. He apparently caught a thief. They made an arrest, and he helped in some other situations. So he wanted to be a cop. He was very, very overzealous in what he was doing. Fine. And there were some other things that that happened. There was a woman filed a petition against him, claiming that he came to her house and became violent when she told him to leave. And a month before that, he was at a bar at the University of Central Florida when a friend was arrested on suspicion of serving minors. So he became ugly, nasty, profane, and pushed a cop who tried to get him, you know, escort him out of there. He was arrested after a short struggle. So, see, everything that's happened, the good, the bad, everything is coming out. You know, he was pursued for unpaid debts and all this other stuff. Anything that's happened now is out there for him, you know, for the taking. I say forget a lot of this other stuff and focus on what happened and what happened in the moment when he chased down Trayvon Martin. And the real mistake here is, if he's overzealous, is just the fact that he needed to, after he called 911, okay, fair if he called 911 because he was this guy who was constantly patrolling and just thought that Trayvon didn't belong. They told him to not pursue him, but he insisted on doing it. And here the kid was just wearing a hoodie, and, you know, it's like I'm just pounding the same thing over and over again. But he had Skittles in his hand, and, you know, he went to go get a soda and some Skittles, and the rest is history after this. So in the Justice Department, there are so many people that are saying, you know, listen, this is just not right. I mean, this is just not right that this happened to this kid. And Zimmerman was waiting to pop. He was an aspiring cop. His applications were rejected by the police department. So, you know, Trayvon's last words, apparently, are, "Why are you following me?" Some such thing like this that's been recorded. And the issue just becomes this whole self-defense thing. So if you wanted to look at it this way, I looked at, you know, they were saying the heights and the weights and all this stuff. This George Zimmerman's, you know, practically 250 pounds. The kid was taller and skinny, 120 pounds. And the guy starts chasing him, going after him. So what is going to happen when he grabs him or confronts him? What do you think is going to happen? But he had a gun. And so then, you know, here we go. You know, why was he carrying the gun in the first place in the neighborhood? If he was, quotes, a regular neighborhood watch person, which he wasn't, and that's part of the problem. Anyone in neighborhood watch, they carry like flashlights and they patrol around in cars and that kind of stuff. So there isn't any justice in this case. And wannabes are the worst. I have a brother-in-law who's a cop, and he has told me massive stories about this. Anybody out there listening who's in law enforcement, you know exactly what I mean. If someone is a little bit of a loose cannon and they have a sort of an attitude and they're out there, this is what could possibly happen. Unfortunately, this is what happened. So, now we move on from what is going to happen as far as justice is concerned. And I don't know that Zimmerman, because the cops already missed the boat, they didn't charge him with anything. They just, okay, here's my story, self-defense, and that's it. They just left it at that. And I don't know what the feds are going to do. I don't know how they're going to try to, what they're going to see when they uncover everything, and what can they charge him with, basically, is what I'm saying. So this is tough. Now, if we go to another form of justice, something completely different, talk about the Army Staff Sergeant who is going to find himself facing 17 counts of murder. The question that his attorney is raising is, why was he deployed when he had a traumatic brain injury from a rollover event that he was involved in Iraq? Why was he put in this position? And the attorney is setting up to point to the military as to your fault. Your fault that Bales was, his mind was crazed because you put him in that situation. He should have not been put in that situation. So the 38-year-old will be charged on Friday with 17 counts of murder, killing. And the death penalty is still hanging around. It's not off the table. And this stems back to March 11th, the shooting rampage in southern Afghanistan, where 9 children were killed as part of the group of people that, of the 16 that were killed. And he just may be, it hasn't happened since the 60s, since 61, he just might be the soldier that gets the death penalty for what's happened here. But we still can't put together everything that's gone on in Afghanistan as a result of what's gone on with Bales, what happened when he left the base. And his defense lawyer is smart about this. He's asking, should he have been sent to Afghanistan with a brain injury? Is the military so desperate because it's a voluntary situation that they take a guy who's served again and again and they put him out there, that he's got to serve? He signed up. He's got to serve. Too bad if you've had this injury. And justice here, where is the justice? His attorney, John Henry Brown, is saying, you know, he's not getting justice. But what about all those people that were killed? Wow. Sad, sad, sad times. Remember, coming up in our third hour, if you can kick over to it, we're doing that nail the score thing, mixing in March Madness.